Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, AA meeting on air. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic. We'll start our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve the common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any set, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, and neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of the fellowship in who will be sharing their experience, strength and hope about the journey of recovery from alcoholism. And to start the sharing off this morning, Dougie, do you want to share?
Thanks, Steve. Hi, I'm Dougie. I'm an alcoholic. Hi,
Dougie.
Great to be at this recorded meeting, and hi to everybody that might be listening. Yeah, look, more than happy to share my experience, strength and hope. A little bit about before getting sober, but mostly, hopefully, my experience in sobriety. I started my drinking at quite a young age, teenager, and continued on for over 40 years. Quite a long stint, good times and bad times, but the last few years were certainly very bad times. Physically, mentally, just not with it at all, and became increasingly just irresponsible and didn't give a damn, quite frankly, about what was happening in my life. Lost my wife, my family, lost my house, my business, ended up bankrupt, and to complete the set, I was facing time in jail for multiple drink driving offences. That's when my life turned around. I got lucky. Might sound strange saying I got lucky facing jail time, but rather than going to jail, I got put into the alcohol and drug court, and they instructed me through a whole sequence and series of rehabs and counselling and support, which was 4.5 years ago, and 4.5 years down the track. Everything I was given the opportunity to undertake and learn about myself and about alcohol and alcoholism has put me into probably the best condition I've been in my life. Reflecting back on that change and transition, there's a couple of things that stand out to me that one of those I wish I'd known then what I know now, but I just didn't. Jumping a bit before my sobriety, I wasn't brand new to AA. I'd been in and around AA for several years, but didn't get it, wasn't really motivated, was doing it to get other people off my back, to satisfy the family, and therefore didn't learn. However, one of the things I did learn and happily acknowledge to people is that I was an alcoholic. My problem was I just didn't give a damn. Didn't think it was a problem. And I'll address you to one of my key learnings, which was step one. During those years of not getting it, I focused on the second part of the step one statement that talks about our life being unmanageable. I thought my life was still manageable, and increasingly it wasn't. As I said earlier, I ended up with bankruptcy and losing everything. But what I hadn't paid attention to was the first part of that statement, which says we were powerless over alcohol. When I got my act together and paid attention to my recovery, the thing that made the biggest difference to me in the early days was understanding that I was powerless over alcohol. Not just that I was an alcoholic, but what that meant to me was I had no power over alcohol. If I take one drink, I don't stop. I see a picture in my head, I light up like a Christmas tree. alcohol does something special to me, which I thought I enjoyed, but unfortunately, unlike a normal person who might enjoy a few drinks, I have no ability to stop. So craziness and disaster and out of controlness necessarily follows. So that was a real tipping point for me, was that insight. And that's when I became really hungry to learn how to stay stopped, because I knew my powerlessness meant no more drinking for me ever, which I was kind of comfortable with. But it did mean I had a lot of learning to do. And one of the most challenging things for me in following the 12 steps and changing my my way of living, which was much more than just not drinking, was the simple idea of asking for help. I had never wanted to ask for help. Pride and ego had got in the way, and also a sense of fear and humiliation, because in my upbringing, in my environment, asking for help was a sign of weakness, and it just wasn't something I was comfortable with. So I would suffer in silence or douse myself with alcohol to overcome many of the challenges, normal challenges that everybody else faces. So I wasn't special, but the way I dealt with those challenges, my coping mechanism was turning to alcohol. So this idea of asking for help was a bigger hurdle than it ever should have been, and that was just my attitude. So I can remember the first few occasions asking people for guidance, for help, and being astonished that people were willing to do that without ridiculing or belittling me. And I got quite comfortable and was much, much more willing and in fact became quite greedy for asking for help, which was wonderful. I then had a second realization, which was probably even more useful in terms of my recovery, which was to actually take the help and apply it, not just listen to it and enjoy the process of people being kind and generous to me, but actually apply the good advice and the good messages that were being offered to me. And as I've come to hear many, many times and fully understand within the fellowship, is it's all about taking actions. I, in my early enthusiasm, tried to understand the 12 steps and work out how they all interacted with each other, and thought I could start at step 12 by helping other people because I was a good guy, and it was pointed out to me that I should really start at step 1 and then do step 2. And as I did that and actually put the help, the suggestions and support that I got, as I put that into practice, life got much better, quite quickly, actually. It wasn't a miracle resolution, but very quickly I got comfortable with living in my own skin, which in previous times I would have very, very actively told you I was not comfortable in my own skin, and the only way I felt comfortable in my own skin was drinking. And that was something that had made me nervous about sobriety, was just being permanently in a state of discomfort, living life on life's terms. But applying the 12 steps and living out sobriety fully, that those worries turned out to be unfounded. And 4.5 years later, I pretty much followed those new behaviours and practices on a daily basis. I don't do that as a formula because I've done it so much now. It's just natural to me. I sometimes wonder why it took me so long to work out how good living could be done without alcohol. But if my experience is anything to go by, if you put in the work, it works. And the results, I look at the promises from the Big Book quite regularly, and I'm astonished that every single one of those promises has come true and continues to come true. And my life is radically different now, and I enjoy every day. I'm sober every day. I look forward to every day, and much less worried about the future and what it holds. So I'm a fan, if you haven't already detected, I'm a fan of sobriety, and cornerstone of my sobriety is keeping regularly in touch with AA, and in fact now being a bit better qualified, doing a bit of 12-step work to try and help other people. So thanks for asking me to share today, Steve.
Cheers. Thanks, Dougie. This is Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM, and we have members of the fellowship on this morning sharing their experience, strength and hope about the journey of recovery from alcoholism. And to continue on with the sharing, Paul, do you want to share?
Thanks, Steve. Hi, everyone. I'm Paul, alcoholic.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Paul.
It's good to be here. I got a message yesterday, asked if I could come and do some service, and it's good to do service, even though this morning I didn't want to be here. Today I understand it's the action, and you know, sobriety is the most hardest, uncomfortable thing I've ever done in my life, and that's the feeling of today, you know. And I have a disease that likes to mask up yesterday's actions, you know, through drinking and drugging and the behaviour that really went along with it. And I'm grateful for sobriety today. I enjoyed my drinking. You know, I heard in the rooms when I first got here a few years back, the irritable, restless and discontented feeling, and I identified with that from a very, very young age. And it was, life was a struggle, you know. I didn't know how to fit, I didn't know how to adapt, and I found rebellious ways to fit in the world. That was my way of dealing with it. And I had a family that was a drinking family, and it was exhibited to me how to drink from a very young, early age, the fun that could be had. So the fantasy of drinking was probably, the seed was set in me from a very young age, even though I didn't pick up till I was about 15, and that's when I found my first oblivion, and I really thought I'd found the answer to life. And it served me, so what I thought, for a long time. You know, I had ambitions for the world, you know, I wanted to be somebody, and I set off, you know, and I fought, you know. I got a half decent job and was able to settle down. I met a girl, and we got married and had children. My children got married. I never would try. But there was always something, you know. I detected from a young age something was different, you know. When I drank, I couldn't quite hold it together, you know. I was always out in the garden. I was one of those garden drinkers. I was always in the garden somewhere at somebody's party, and that never left me. I could never shake that, and that served me for a long time, because life was good, you know. I found other ways of trying to fit in the world as well, you know. I earned an okay wage to buy, you know, to buy some stuff, you know, bought stuff, and that's all it was stuff to try and make me feel better, you know. And I obsessively went about doing, you know, building cars and whatnot, it was like my fantasy garage. I'd go down and I'd have a drink and other things, and then I just fantasize about what's going to happen, you know. And that's how it was, you know. And it served me for a long time, you know. And much like I heard, you know, I'd go to the when I come into AA, you know, I'd go to the pub with all intentions after work of having a couple of beers, and, you know, and I'd text my partner and say I'd be home soon, you know, and then she'd ring me, and then that blackout would happen, and I'd wake up in the car park at the pub, and I'd wake up in the car park, and I'm the only car in the car park, or I got home and I wake up and I go, where's the car, you know. And those were the things that sort of happened, and I justified my drinking, or justified that I didn't have a drinking problem, because I used to take a lot of other substances as well, mainly pot, and over those years of trying to, you know, not really seeing as a problem. And they made fun stories, you know. They really did. There came a point in my time when, you know, my marriage ended. And I was living by myself, you know, and I'd crash cars. And I'd also, you know, while I was in my marriage, you know, I'd have... My wife would, you know, would say to me, you know, I have responsibilities for my son. You know, I would go out. I was going to a party. I was going to a friend's engagement party, and I took a 4-pack, you know, and I said, you know, I wasn't good. I was just going to drink the 4-pack through the day, and I'd be fine to drive home. And I took my son. My wife gave me strict instructions that was all that's going to happen, you know. But the truth is that I couldn't do that, you know, and I drove home drunk that night, and, you know, and that happened many times over. And I was a serial drink driver, you know. Once I had a drink in me,
okay.
And once I had a drink in me, you know, it was over. So, you know, I'd at that point, you know, it was worsening. You know, my marriage had ended. My son didn't want much to do with me, and so I was living by myself. You know, and I thought that was the solution. You know, that was it was my wife that was the problem. You know, so you know, and the truth is, from there it just accelerated. You know, and there was nobody to regulate me. It was just me, and then I found a pattern occurring that no matter what I thought, this insanity started to begin. That it'd be different every time I drank. Just because it'll be the situation I need to be in, or I need to find the right relationship, or whatever it may be. I was on the search to find something, and it always ended up in the wrong. It always ended up in the same place. That desperation the next day, you know, rolling out of bed, going, "Holy shit, did that just happen last night?" You know, and why, how, who, and you know, and it always ended up. The insanity was that I always, you know. It always ended up the same way, no matter how what I thought my process was when I went out or when I picked up that first drink. And, you know, and life was losing its value, you know, and I tried to do things. You know, I could sense I was on that slippery slope, so I was fortunate, you know, I had a little bit of money and I was sliding, so I purchased a house and did a lot of work, and I threw myself into that, and I found myself getting drunk every day. So that, you know, that was my next fix, was just, I'm just going to do this house up because that'll keep me sober. But it was just insanity, and you know, and it just got worse again. And that slide of not having life value in life, it just becoming more important. And I just remember jumping in the pool one night, and I didn't care whether I was serviced or not. You know, and I'd never felt like that before. You know, I was drunk, obviously, and I said to my mates, "Come in," and they said, "No, we're too drunk." And I didn't understand that, and I knew things. You know, I was empty on the inside, and the alcohol couldn't fill it up anymore. And there was, you know, it was a period of time, probably 6 months from that period, where I still seek to try and fill that void. And it come to a point, and it wasn't a big night. I just broke, and I broke inside, and I couldn't do it anymore. And something was removed from me on that night. And I'd kicked the doors of AA open 6 months previously, probably a couple of years previously, and I wasn't ready at that stage, but I knew where to go. So I turned up at a meeting on a Friday night. Not wanting to drink that night, or drug, you know. And from that day, a gentleman sat next to me, says, "Here's a meetings list, and here's a starters pack." And he said, "There's a meeting on tomorrow if you want to go to it." And I was willing to do that. So that was my journey. And by the grace of a God, I didn't really believe in it at that time, but something had happened to me that I didn't understand. But I haven't had to have a drink since that day, and I'm so grateful. So I started my journey, and I picked myself up a sponsor. I saw somebody that I liked, and that I saw stuff in him that I desired, attributes, and you know, and just a way that he conducted himself. and I asked him to be my sponsor, and he says, well, let's just catch up. So, you know, so I caught up, and he became my sponsor, and we set up on the task of working through the steps. And, you know, I had to find my bottom to find that place where I could surrender, that my life had become unmanageable and I was powerless over alcohol, you know, and that's step one. And find that, you know, set off that course of finding a higher power, a conception, you know, and of my own belief. And it's taken time. I've been sober a couple of years now, a few years. And to build that faith, to build that that belief in a higher power, you know, that can restore me to sanity, and the daily action of turning my life all over to Him, and it's been a great journey, and my life is fuller than it's ever been today. I have a young child, have a beautiful partner that's also in the fellowship, and you know, and life is hard, life is challenging, it really is challenging, but it's far better than my best day drunk, you know. And they say that with an A, and I understand what that is today. And it took, you know, and sobriety is challenging. We had a really challenging morning, but it passes, and I get to come and do service like this to remind me of the gifts of being sober, and you know, I can apply love. You know, I learned how to love. I learned to be loved. And I'm so ever grateful for that. So thanks to Steve asking me to share. Cheers.
Thanks, Paul. You're with Planet FM on 104.6, and this is Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. The last sharer this morning is Brent. Would you like to share?
Hi, my name's Brent, and I'm an
alcoholic.
Hi, Brent. Hi,
Brent. Really good to be here, and good to be with other men in the fellowship. Dougie and Paul and Steve. I am 2.5 years sober, 2 years and 4 months actually. I got sober on 10th of June 2015, and AA is now the biggest part of my life. I maintain my sobriety today with 3 meetings a week. I also do things outside of AA to support my health. I am like Paul and Dougie and Steve in this room. My alcoholism has manifested as I've got older, and it manifested with my life becoming more and more unmanageable. I always feel that my sharing or my experience is not as colourful in an activity way. I have not had a colourful life as others have, but emotionally my disease took me to places that were very scary and life-threatening to me. And I think you cannot compare your drinking with another person. Drinking for me, you know, was very different from other people in the rooms. I have not been a drinker that could go grazing through the day with a glass in my hand. I was always a person that when I drank very quickly and hard and fast to the point of blackout, that would create a situation where I was quite sick, and I could then go a couple of days feeling very ill before I drank again. And I can't share my story without going back as far as I can remember. You know, I think I've always had the ism of alcoholism for as long as I can remember. I sincerely believe it's in my family. I see it in my mother. And for as long as I can remember, from a very young age, I was very distressed, and I did not want for anything materially, but for whatever reason, emotionally, I didn't feel I got what I needed. I remember having a very strong connection with a female teacher from the age of seven, and I was obviously not getting sufficient emotional care at home to act out at such a young age and have feelings for a parent figure, a female parent figure. I was in a lot of grief the year later that I moved on from her, and I acted out. I was very angry, and I was in trouble with schooling. I was lacking and behind in my education. I was told off for very menial things like my spelling and reading. I then realised that my behaviour was actually not okay and it wasn't acceptable. And I kind of, at that point, and through my home situation, my mother's parenting and my harsh environment, I began to survive through people pleasing. I lived and breathed survival of myself through making other people happy, and I almost prepared, I basically adjusted myself to move forward and control my environment, which was very difficult, but that is actually the formation that I had, which led me into adulthood. So from moving through my teens into adulthood, I became what everybody wanted me to be. I lost my true self and I was driven on false self. I always, though, had the ism of alcohol. But the people pleasing and the non-ability to express who I truly was, it manifested in my living a double life. My double life was fulfilling obligation and then running into fantasy, avoidance and escapism. I would be very high achieving. I would overwork. I would overcare. I would overlove. I had no boundary control. And in the end, you know, I was a very distressed person. And my problems came out in a series of breakdowns, you know, and that led to my actually falling very sick, seeing doctors, and then discovering that my drinking was really at the forefront of my problem and my escapism. I've then found the rooms. What I tend to do today, which is very different, I get out of bed, and taking alcohol away has given me the ability to not go ahead of myself. I live in the present, and I, as hard as life is, and I still have the same problems, I don't need to prepare my way forward. I can actually deal with whatever's going, and I can sit within myself and within the problems within myself. But, you know, I need AA and I need the example of other men especially. And I couldn't do this without a regular regime of self-parenting, and that actually starts for me in the fellowship. And so I'm very, very pleased to be here, and I'm very pleased to share, you know, my example as unique as that is. Thank you, Steve.
Great. Thanks, Brent. You've been listening to Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM, and we'll be back here again next Sunday at 10:45, and you can log on to aa.org.nz, and in the drop-down box you have a list of all meetings in the Greater Auckland area, or you can phone 0800 AA Works, and that will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. We'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.